You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Los Angeles, California, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, hanging out with my partner in soccer, David Goss. New digs, man. I prefer this.
Yeah,
we are sitting
sure.
on a porch,
back porch,
looking at palm trees. The birds are chirping. It's nice and it's warm, but it's not too warm. It's cool, but it's not too cool.
It's perfect out.
It's California.
You mentioned the palm trees. I was told by my driver coming in here.
I'm wrong. They're not palm trees?
No, they are. They're just not native. So they've all been repurposed.
They're everywhere. They're huge. They look like they're going to fall over in the wind.
Yeah. It is idyllic.
It is. And why are we here? One reason only. Extra Time live on Sunday, 5 to 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern, going down on, Facebook Live. It's going to go down on YouTube, on Twitter, on MLSsoccer.com. We're going to be hanging out at LAFC's first ever home game at Bank of California Stadium. Going to be out in the parking lot with the 3252, the Black Army. Eating tacos, I'm sure. Playing some pickup soccer, giving away a huge box full of T-shirts, jerseys, match balls. It's our second show of the year. Tune in, watch it, like the Facebook page, facebook.com/extratimelive to make sure that you know when it's going down. I'm just really excited to be a part of the culture that's going to be developed by this club and to kind of see, not the first iteration, because they've been doing this stuff for a while, but the first time they get to walk into a building and say, this is us. This is our home. This is our present. This is our future. This is where our memories are going to be made. This is where we will become whatever it is that we will become. And to see that for the first time is, to me, that's a special piece of history for this league and for this club.
Absolutely. And just the buildup. You know, it's interesting. We were here in L.A. 2 years ago sitting with John Thorington.
Yeah, we were.
In Manhattan Beach to talk about this project. And you talked about it, and it was
It was just floating ideas at that time.
But also, a lot of those crazy floating ideas have come to fruition. The names of the players, you know, the quality of the players.
Mm-hmm. The coach.
The locations of the stadium, the coach.
The training facility, which we were at today, $30 million. It is gorgeous.
The vibe that they've created of, like, this is cool, and this is different, and it's very L.A. And all of that has been pretty consistent. And so I think when they put down their dream board of what they wanted it to look like, I think they've hit most of those marks so far. The last thing is the success on the field.
We got the tour of the training facility today. There is not much I can say about that other than just completely class. And I think the best part of it is that it is so LA. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, everything has an indoor-outdoor space. And as a New Yorker, I'm just like, what? Like, it's still kind of tough weather back in New York,
out.
And like we haven't had a spring. We probably won't have a spring. And you know, you talk to people here today, and you're like, man, is it like this every day? And they're like, yeah. And I know it sounds cool, but it kind of sucks because all the days blur together. I'm like, that's what someone so spoiled by this lifestyle would say. And this is what you get to enjoy every day here.
Yeah,
I'm jealous. What stood out for you from the training facility as you walk through it? I mean.
So
we don't get to use these things. We do get to gawk at them.
So it's very nice. It's very impressive. It feels like a Silicon Valley office. It also at times feels like the launch party for a cool album, a like low-key under-the-radar hip-hop album. And then
like,
also
– we just, you know, not ironically have a whole lot of old shipping containers here. We wanted to build the whole thing out of old shipping containers.
It's a lot of –
because this is a lifestyle blog.
It's a lot of black steel, gold steel. Yeah. There's a lot of cement out there, but it's like cool or whatever.
Yeah. Just one field, which is interesting, but space is an issue. They say you have two more on the way.
But you talk to them about that one field. Bob Bradley talks to you a lot about the grass, the quality, the way it's cut.
He's obsessed.
The way it's kept. Those are the things that stood out to me was the little pieces, the little details that were thought about and were thought about the guys up top that are trying to build this top-down philosophy of not just a club, an organization, right? And that stuff's interesting to me, and it's interesting in sports because it's so obvious with players, like management and interaction and a locker room. It's not as obvious in the workplace. Every one of us deals with it at our jobs.
Yeah, just the culture. Is it good? Is it bad? You know almost immediately.
And now they're trying to build both of those at the same time together in what they would like to be a unique style.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see it come together.
So come hang out with us 5 to 5:30 p.m. Pacific if you're out in L.A. Christmas Tree Lane is where the tailgate's going down. We'll be out there hanging out. Come say hi if you see him at the you see us at the stadium. We'll basically be done working at that time. We're just enjoying the festivities, and we'd love to do that with you. 8 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern if you're out on the East Coast. Facebook.com/ExtraTimeLive. You can watch it also on YouTube, Twitter, MLSsoccer.com, all the MLS digital channels. We're going to get to Free Space's disappointment. You know, in this idyllic atmosphere with this idyllic view, it didn't feel right to start with CONCACAF Champions League. We'll get to that in a second. But by the way, MLS Live, RIP, pour one out. ESPN Plus is where you can get your MLS now. $4.99 a month, 7-day free trial, so go get that one. It starts this week. You can watch an iPhone or your iPad, Android, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, Chromecast, Roku, basically anywhere you stream anything, you can watch Major League Soccer. So it's pretty sweet. So let's get into it, man. You were in Guadalajara.
Yeah,
I was on a plane.
Let's get upset.
So you're basically going to be – I have not had time to go back and watch the full game, which I will do here at some point.
Oh, so I'm the expert.
So you're going to be – oh, yeah, a little bit of are you watching the game,
yeah,
looking at the stats?
For sure.
Tough moment for me. yeah, here's how it went down for me, and you can tell me how it actually went down. I am, like, on my phone – like frantically updating Twitter and Toronto FC's feed. I'm like, what's the lineup? What's the lineup?
Yeah.
What's the lineup? Of course, Toronto FC with a 2-1 deficit after Chivas Guadalajara got that win at BMO Field. And you said, you know what? I was pessimistic and partially I wanted to kind of quasi jinx the result and say, no way, it's going to be a disappointment. They're going to lose and I can be happy when they win. And I see the lineups come out and I'm like, wait, who's playing center back? Who's in the midfield? Michael Bradley's at center back with Vanderweel. And then you've got Nicholas Hassler in the midfield. This is bizarre, but apparently Drew Moore got a hamstring injury, and he's out for the game. And quad strain, and Mavinga had a hamstring injury, and Haglund had a hamstring injury, and Hernandez was match fitness, and Zavaleta had a quad, and they had no center backs. So they have to find a way. And I'm like, I don't know how this is going to go. Maybe it'll work. I'm trying to convince myself that Michael Bradley is going to be able to have more freedom in the back line, more time to get his head up, that man marking. And then right before you take off, Chivas scores the goal. And that's 20 minutes in, and I'm like, do I buy the Wi-Fi? And the two people next to me are fast asleep on this 6-hour flight to LA, and I don't want to wake them up. And so I just say, you know what? I'm gonna see what happens. I'm gonna see what the Easter egg tells me on the other end. And I wake up from a 4-hour nap into LAX. I open my phone, I see 2-1, and I'm like, 4-2. Chivas, PKs, gut punch, Free Space. Again. Again. You were in Guadalajara. Tell me what it was really like.
So it went down a little bit differently in person where the game actually played out and whatnot.
Correct, where somebody watched it.
Lineup came out. It's an experience, just one, being down there because, you know, we are so used to going to soccer games, and we're so used to going to pro soccer games. And I have been to a lot of TFC games over the last 2 years. And it's just weird because you're down there and everything's different.
Yeah.
And then, like, the TFC coaching staff comes out on the field to throw cones down. And you're like, oh, right, they're here too.
Yeah.
This is what's about to happen. The crowd was intense. It started slow. It filled in slow. Their supporter section was out of control. Just, like, a mass of humanity just flowing at all times, like, rippling behind one of the goals. And they'd get the whole crowd going, and they'd play this Super Chivas song, and everyone would get into it.
I mean, Super Chivas does sound like a song that if you're a Chivas fan, you would
be pretty into. There's a little mariachi involved with it, too.
What was the city like leading up? So you got there the day before.
It was obsessed with this game. It was obsessed with Toronto coming down and a chance for Chivas to win this trophy and represent Mexico because they only play Mexican players and they play young players and they give opportunities to represent all of that on the world stage at the Club World Cup. On top of that, they are out of it in the league, so this is the last thing they have to celebrate. There were a ton of Chivas fans on my flight to LA this morning. So people came from the U.S. because this was a chance to win a trophy. This was a huge deal. So it was wall-to-wall coverage on TV of just Greg Vanney coming in and out of the hotel, just showing that footage over and over again while showing clips of Giovinco. They are obsessed with Giovinco. They're obsessed with they love him. They hate him. They fear him. Everything involved. One journalist said to me, he's kind of a Mexican player. He's flair. The way he went down and got the PK against Club America, we kind of respect that. So, like, he has really gotten into the bloodstream of the Mexican fans, the Liga MX fans, and what he did to, obviously, Tigres and did to Club America has stood out to them.
And this wasn't a Chivas team that came into this final, like, completely united. Maybe as a squad.
I think they were as a team.
A squad, but there were disconnects between them and the club itself. I mean, they've been protesting for money they say is owed to them for bonuses for a while now. They blew off the media the night before.
Yeah, for Copa MX and Liga MX that they'd won 2 years ago that they still haven't received. Most of those players aren't on the team anymore. Not most, but some of them.
Yeah.
The ones that are, we're saying now's our chance because, if we win this trophy, are we going to get these bonuses? And two, no one is going to care about us in 3 days. So it really started to ramp up. The night before the game, I was out at training. Chivas was supposed to go on the field at like 8 local time. They probably didn't get out there till at least 8:45, if not 9. They came out with T-shirts on that said, you know, basically hashtag to the board, do the right thing as we and the fans go for another trophy. And then they refused to speak to media. They tried to sneak out before speaking to media. They got pulled back in, and then they waited another 45 minutes or whatever, and then they just blew right by and left. And the media actually cheered as they blew by them and refused to talk to them, cheering on their actions and what they were doing. So, yeah, it was not exactly how you would write up here's a simple way to get ready for a final.
Yeah.
Now, on the flip side, TFC kept their cards pretty close to their chest because they could. CONCACAF doesn't have as many rules of requirements of media and whatnot because they're on the road. You know, they're not really at events doing as much. So they kept things close to the chest. They brought Zavaleta. I've been told there was no chance he was ever going to play. So he came down just as an idea to try and avoid the concept of we have no center backs. Drew Moore gets hurt.
I saw Drew Moore come off the bus as I'm like on Twitter, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then I see the lineup, I'm like, wait, what?
Yep, and they kept that one pretty close to the chest as well. So they did as much as they could to cause some confusion going into the game to try and show their best hand. And the game starts, and you're thinking, they were going to go for it to some extent, right? Like you said, like maybe Bradley then, you know, gets to move a little bit. And I think early on in my mind, it was like 3-man back line at times because Bradley would go and Vanderwild would just sit in the middle. Jonathan Osorio, I think, read the situation really well and played a good – you wouldn't call it a pulley because they're not central midfielders next to each other, but would cover and let Bradley go because they need him to get on the ball, to initiate at times. Because at times Delgado isn't going to force the initiative. And then you've got your center backs or your fullbacks getting drawn into space that they're not comfortable in. And that's where Bradley normally comes, picks up the ball, switches play, moves the game, and dictates what's happening. And he wasn't there to do that. They give up the first goal. Aro gets turned.
It's a bad giveaway. It's a giveaway in
yeah,
the middle
but
of the field,
Aro,
which is the only way Chivas has scored this entire
– yes,
like at least recently –
and,
in this tournament.
And an assist from Pizarro, who's the only one who's shown any quality to finish off any plays. And then Aro gets turned on the goal, and then it looked bad for about 5 minutes. And there was 5 minutes where you were, like, looking at the roster, and you're thinking back, and we've talked about it all, you know, all our CCL experiences and being like, this kind of looks like Santos TFC, like, 2011. You know, like, this looks like this thing could get out of hand. You've got Nico Hassler starting in this one. Like, you've got Vanderwill starting
in the midfield,
center back.
Not as a wing back.
Right. And it looked like it could kind of get out of control. That was the most impressive part to me from TFC was they got on the ball. They slowed play. They killed the crowd for a while. They really brought the energy down. And man-to-man, they played out of pressure better than Chivas. Man-to-man, they were more comfortable on the ball. Guys weren't in their natural positions a lot of times, and it took a little while. I think Nico Hassler adjusted really well and started to realize, like, I can physically dominate fullbacks on this team. So he started to body players
and
up
did that to
and
get
hold
the
ball.
Goal. He like, bullied his way through three or four guys in the box, plays it across. Josie with the double Meg finish.
I love Josie.
And, you know, then you're thinking, anybody but me, because I'm asleep on a plane ruining my decision-making skills. It's on. Yeah. And then Sebastian Giovinco scores, and it's
well,
on.
Well, first, Giovinco gets a yellow card. So Giovinco got into this thing where he twice, off the ball, sort of off the ball, made no attempt at the ball and immediately just fouled the Chivas player. Both times he complains. The second time,
he's got a little bit of petulancy in him.
Oh, absolutely. The second time, he makes a scene of it. And when there was three moments in this game where this happened. It was just, you could feel 60,000 people just watching one thing, and everyone just starts whistling and booing, and Giovinco's got the Italian hands out in front of him. Why? Screaming. And it's like, he's just yelling himself into a yellow card. And you three, four times just be like, just stop. He still hasn't given the card. Just stop. Eventually he gets the yellow. A minute and a half later, he scores the goal, goes short side, shoots it early. Goalkeeper, I don't think, had a good sight of it. A goal we've seen him score a bunch in this league because everyone thinks he's going to curl something perfect back post. And you're like, here it is. Your two DPs showed up. You got your big moments. You're up 2-1. You're going into halftime. You can readjust. You can talk it with your coaching staff. They go into halftime. They come back out, and they still looked pretty good.
Yeah, what happened in the second half? This is what I've spent the better part of the last – let's see, I landed like 1 a.m. It's now, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 hours trying to figure out.
What happened was guys that don't play 90 minutes of high-level professional soccer had to play 90 minutes.
And by the way, Victor Vasquez had to play 70 minutes. He started this game. We haven't talked about him yet because he obviously wasn't himself.
No, he played. He started. He hasn't played in like 8 weeks. He's played like 10 minutes in the last 2 months, basically. He tried to do what he does. He tried to switch the field, make big plays. His touch looked okay. He beat a couple guys, but he didn't have the speed to keep pushing. The way the team was set up, he didn't really get into that zone 14 area where he like can pull the strings and dominate. He was an outlet at times, a safe player to get the ball into his feet so you can try and get out, but he kept trying to switch the field, and he wasn't hitting the ball well, and he turned it over in two or three areas where it could have been a goal if it was a better team going back the other way, which we will get to later on in this because I'm not done with that. And then they just didn't have bullets off the bench. Greg Vanney just didn't have anything to go to. You're talking about CCL final. This is arguably the biggest game in TFC's history. And you look at the bench, and you've got a guy who's played one MLS game in Telfer who you're thinking, can this USL kid give me something? You've got Jay Chapman. You've got Jordan Hamilton. You've got Akeche who's played, 27 minutes for you ever? That's not what you want in this biggest game ever. And they just didn't have enough to even sustain. Because, Chivas then got on top and started to push play, and the crowd got behind them. But even then, they didn't create great chances. And you could argue that TFC created the two most dangerous chances over the last 30 minutes of this game, which if they score, they're through.
Yeah.
And if they score...
Chivas did hit the post.
Yeah.
The big miss that everybody is talking about, that Marky Delgado is talking about, of course, and basically apologizing for, comes in stoppage time. Ball falls to his feet. He skies it. And we'll get to skying it in a little bit detail later. But it's not like a you have to score that chance.
No, it's an awkward, like, he hits it right as it's about to hit the ground. So it's like a half volley type thing. There's a few players in front of him, but that was the chance. You looked around the press box after that one and looked around the stadium. Everyone had their hands on their head. Even Chivas people, like, we thought that was it.
Yeah. Long story short, it wasn't it.
No.
Goes to PKs.
It goes to PKs and it's PKs. So everyone's talking about that.
Osorio hits the crossbar, and then, Chivas doesn't miss, and Michael Bradley, it's because I spent some time with him today. Michael Bradley puts it over.
Yeah.
Puts it over, and that's it.
It is, and I'll
it's free space.
There's been a lot of conversation in the last 24 hours about what has occurred, what it means, disappointment, TFC this, TFC that, Michael Bradley's legacy, all those things. Listen, I don't know how you walk away from that game and don't think that TFC are the best team in the region. I don't know how you walk away from that game, especially if you're a TFC fan and you're not proud of the way they played. The way they performed, they were missing five center backs. The back line that started in MLS Cup in, 4 months ago, 5 months ago? Not a single one of those players was there. This is what you're talking about in your biggest game ever, and they dominated on the road. They won 2-1. It should have been more.
Just the second time ever, in addition to just the second time ever that a team has won away in the knockout round. I think the first time ever that an MLS team has won away in the second leg.
Yeah.
That's the first time ever.
So all of those things still exist. It's soccer. Sometimes some teams win. Sometimes I was actually thinking about it when we were talking to John Thorington today because of that DC RSL US Open Cup where you were like, one team deserved to win that game and one team didn't. But it doesn't matter. If you're a Chivas fan, it doesn't matter. But if you're talking about higher, bigger picture stuff, you can't take away the idea that TFC were clearly the better team. They beat the two best teams in Mexico already, going away on the second leg. And in this one, completely depleted, playing a few USL players at the end of the game, they still were the better team. They still created more chances on the road, and they ended a PK shootout away from losing. A PK shootout, to me, you can talk about an individual player and saying, like, you need to be good here and there. But from a team perspective, you go on the road, you get the result. You lose in PKs, it's a coin flip. In reality, yeah, there's you're watching tape, there's execution things, but that's not soccer. That's penalty kicks. So they went down there, and they kind of did what they had to do. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate they gave up the two chances that they did in the first leg, because that was really
Yeah, one of them I wouldn't even call a chance. One of them is just a shot cross that Alex Bono just happens to misread.
And I thought he was tentative in the first half, played much better in the second half, was close on the first PK. Otherwise, he really didn't get close to any of them. Delgado misses the chance. Jay Chapman almost set up Jordan Hamilton for a chance. Jozy Altidore goes down hurt again. That's another – that can go in your CCL bingo for next year or whatnot. That really hurt this team because he's a guy who you could constantly play through, who can dominate, who can control the game. And Javinko was good. I mean, obviously, he scored a goal. He was good once again. Osorio was good but really died. Ashton Morgan ran out of energy. It was just guys, I think, that Greg Vanney's comment after the game was, we've battled through this thing. Because it's not the amount of games. It's they haven't been off in 2 years. This team hasn't taken a break in 2 years. They lost 2016 MLS Cup. Most of their players stuck around to practice to get ready for 2017. They then ran through 2017, and then they stuck around to get ready for CCL. They've then played CCL and MLS, and you get to this game. And so one of the things, like, we'll talk about next week with Bobby, because Bobby has his own theories on when this thing should be played, is you have no offseason. And so these players, yeah, maybe it's a minor injury for Zavaleta, but his body maybe isn't ready to recover because he hasn't taken a break in 16 months, 18 months, whatever it is. And so that's part of what goes into this whole thing. And then on the flip side, you've got guys like Akeche who you can't get comfortable yet. Vanderweel and Aro have started most of these CCL
games
for
well.
You. Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't it be nice to have them comfortable in their positions and like understanding what you're trying to do? And even with that, Greg Vanney goes down. He plays a new formation with a group of new players, and they outplay a team on the road.
So, look, we talked about the legacy stuff for Toronto FC, and you know this is a huge disappointment for the club, for the players, for the league, for everybody involved, because it was so close. This was supposed to be the domino that fell. This was supposed to be the year. This was supposed to be the team. Their MLS's best ever team, and don't even come at me with any sort of alternative to that take, because it's just not there.
Yeah,
it doesn't. Come on. Get out of here with that. Yeah, they lost a final. A lot of teams lose finals. Are we going to denigrate every team that has? No.
And they've also lost them both in PKs.
Just so painful. And both in games that they outplayed the opposition.
Yeah, that's
which has
true
to hurt
too,
even
yeah.
more. Because if there's an alternative universe where Toronto FC have two MLS Cups, a treble, I don't know if you call this the quad.
Yeah.
CCL final, are going to go to a Club World Cup, have a chance to win their third straight. I mean, you're talking about a team that's out here like running around with a crown on, and everyone is paying homage because they're the undisputed kings, and it just didn't happen for them. What did we learn from this edition of CONCACAF Champions League? You had two MLS teams in the semis. You arguably should have had two MLS teams in the final. Again, I'll repeat it 1,000 times. This tournament is the. It will destroy your should statements every single time. What should happen, odds are, is not going to happen unless it's Liga MX winning the thing.
I think when we started this, when the draw came out, I think most of us said Seattle were the MLS favorites to go the farthest because of the road TFC had. And you looked at that side of the bracket, and Chivas, we thought, was the worst team, Liga MX team at that level. So that clearly wasn't true. That goes down in the – there's no way to predict what happens in this thing. You look at it and you say –
So that's one of the disappointments, right? That they and FC Dallas are the two big disappointments from this tournament. I think the Seattle Sounders –
No, TFC not winning it is.
Well, I mean, I think in a grand scheme thing. Obviously, that's the one that, like, will really stare you in the face. But from a big picture, you look at Toronto FC's run, and you're right. It's an incredible run. Colorado in the wake. Tigres on away goals. Did it at home. Did it on the road. America, two legs, better team, no doubt. Better team than Guadalajara. Couldn't do it. So that's that to me, an overall picture. It's painful, but it's positive.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle Sounders not really being able to challenge Chivas, especially away. Like, just looking out of it, that's not good. Taro, come on, FC Dallas. Fly the flag, man. Not for the league, for yourselves.
The Dallas one is worse because Seattle was so depleted. And Dallas was too.
But find a way past the team that America then just blew off the field as they should. Like, I'm not saying you should have done that, but you should have found a way to get through.
Yep.
You're a good enough team to do that. I think the Red Bulls, the big disappointment, is the same disappointment it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the, like, who do you, you know, people are inevitably going to be like, oh, who's this on? And they're like, oh, it's on the Red Bulls for not getting the job done second leg. If they'd gotten the job done, this would be a coronation for Major League Soccer. This would be a rehash of an incredible playoff series from last year. This would be a clash of styles that everyone could get behind and say, wow, that's exciting and different and fun. And we would have a team in the Club World Cup. You could put it on and say, hey, Alex Bono doesn't wave on that cross shot. They're there because then they have, you know, it's 1-1, 2-1, they're through. If Marky Delgado finishes, if Michael Bradley doesn't shank the penalty. I mean, there's too many what ifs to put it on one thing. This is where we're at.
Yeah.
You have to get over the finish line.
One of the things we've always talked about is MLS can compete with Liga MX 1 through 4 at the roster. The question was 5 through 8, and now it's more 8 through 15.
Yeah, I think 5 through 8, it's proven that they can. I think this game in part proved, and I don't even know that that's 8 through 15. I kind of feel like that's 13 through 20.
Right. So then the question is it the structure of the tournament that MLS teams can't be fit and ready to go because of where it falls in the calendar? Or are they just not deep enough compared to Liga MX teams? Because to some extent, you go out there. Let's just take Chivas, for example. They're not going to make the playoffs. They beat Seattle, who we talked about being depleted. Then they beat the Red Bulls. Then they beat TFC, who we talked about being depleted. So is it that Chivas is deeper than those teams? Is it that Chivas didn't have any injuries? Really, I mean, Pereira got suspended. Their big names have been around the whole time, quote-unquote big names.
Well, Cota got suspended. Edwin Hernandez got suspended. I mean, they got a win in leg one. That's the disappointing thing, is that leg one went the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
Leg two, you're like, wow, that's an incredible performance by Toronto FC. It's leg one. Leg one is what really bit them.
But I just wonder, do MLS teams need to get one or two players deeper? Is it going to come maybe through the academy in USL? I mean, Hamilton and Chapman come on the field in 5 years is the player that Jordan Hamilton is, right? That comes through more ready because the academies are better run. The coaches are better. The way they challenge them at a younger age is better. That player can make a difference at this level off the bench in a situation like this. So there's still a step to go. All of the Liga MX journalists, all the Mexican journalists that I kind of dealt with when I was down there that I could get to talk to me, they feel like TFC isn't indicative of MLS. They think TFC are so good that this was an example of TFC performing at the international level. This isn't, to them, a sign that MLS has grown that heavily. So that's an interesting way to look at it and think about it.
I've voiced a little bit of that on this, that this success is Toronto FC's and not Major League Soccer's. I might be saying a different thing if Red Bulls had made it, if Sounders had performed better, if FC Dallas had performed better. But, you know, it's the same thing it's always been, which is Liga MX has hegemony. And every single year, every single game, every single minute, every single play, opportunity, fill in the blank, every single time MLS has a chance to prove that mindset wrong, they have to do it. Otherwise, it's going to be the same old, same old. People are going to think that. The results are going to reflect that. And we're going to be stuck in this cycle of CCL free space, of having this conversation over and over and over and over. I love this tournament. This league has made incredible strides in the time that I've been obsessed with CCL Fever. It's just unfortunate and unlucky and, you know, indicative of the slow building process and now a little bit accelerated by TAM. That the level is still different. It's not equal.
Yeah. I don't want to get too deep into this right now because we've already talked about CCL a lot, yeah. But I do wonder that the way MLS is structured, that so Liga MX teams, they win and then they go into CCL. In MLS, it's like you win, then all of a sudden you've got re-entry draft and expansion draft and waiver this and waiver that. And we talk about parity in this league. I wonder if we struggle to get our best teams in CCL. For example, if NYCFC and Atlanta were in this tournament instead of Dallas and what ended
Colorado.
Up being
What's
Colorado,
Colorado.
Yeah. How would you have felt? And how do you think it would have performed?
Yeah, no, it's a completely different tournament.
Right?
And this one's a weird one, too, by the way. This particular tournament, because of the switch to from group stages to round of 16 forward, it all got delayed and it got pushed back. And now you've got Sporting Kansas City that are going to go into this after winning the Open Cup last year.
Colorado were the second worst team in the league last year, and now they're in Champions League. So it's just there's a piece of that I've been thinking about of, and it's not just Atlanta and NYCFC. You know, if Vancouver was the best team in the West last year.
Let's just say they're in for Colorado.
Yeah. Like, that's a different.
Well, Portland was on record.
Yeah, and obviously Vancouver's a Canadian team.
Yeah.
But you look at it, and is there a way maybe to get your best teams going at the right time in this tournament, which I think is still an advantage to Liga MX teams? I know it's not the reason, but TFC just lost on PKs in the final. So whatever the reasons are, quote unquote, are small. This isn't a huge gap anymore. This isn't.
I agree with that.
Yeah, but no one got past the quarterfinals. No one's ever won in Mexico. TFC.
And you got smoked 8-3 on AG.
Right.
Yeah.
TFC just lost in PKs on the final. This isn't a huge difference. Those little things now matter probably more because it's a lot closer.
We have. We've really enjoyed this tournament. We hope you've enjoyed following it with us. We're always going to give CCL Fever a ton of coverage. I've thought about making a Free Spaces Disappointment t-shirt. I think that's a step too far.
So
that's like pain, and that's, I don't want to wear my pain. Let's just say it that way.
So we did the show on Monday and I was like, I think TFC are going to win, but the math won't work out for them. And I was down there and I was like, oh, I really wish I hadn't said that. It was cool to be down there. It was a cool experience. It was cool to see how much it meant to Chivas. You said this has been the best CCL ever.
I think
because
so.
Of the way. I think we're going to see that even more and more of this is going to be a big deal for Liga MX teams. And as that happens, because MLS teams are better and the competition's harder, this competition has legs. I think it's going to be – I've always enjoyed it. You've always enjoyed it because we're nerds. We do weird stuff.
Yeah,
we like
sure.
weird stuff. You know, we like when the coach gets kicked out because he's wearing the same color as the team's jerseys it's all chaos.
Or he's got like the –
someone's got a scarf.
Tuxedo,
right. Someone's got like a scarf on. They're sneaking into training.
Somebody threw one shoe down there. Just weird stuff happening is right in my wheelhouse.
That's never going to change, but I think the stakes of what this thing means and the level that it's played at. I would argue that Tigres-Toronto series is the best soccer I've seen on this continent, maybe ever. Just the level that game was played at, the quality on the field, the identities of the two teams. It was so good, and it was so high energy, and it was so much fun to watch. And that's just what I want to see all the time.
More, please. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0-MLS is a hot take hotline. Call us or text us, extratime@mlssoccer.com, via email, mlssoccer.com/mailbag. If that's your style, we're going to go to break. On the other side, Better Call Paul. Paul Tenorio in MLS Week 9.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
On Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Second segment. Oh my gosh, what is that music? It's a new sting. David Dimmitt's not the only one. Paul Tenorio is on the phone. Better call Paul. Alexi Lawless made that for you, Paul. Say thank you.
Oh man, thank you so much, Alexi. You know what? When you're a young kid and you're watching the World Cup in 1994, and you're growing up watching the game, and you see Alexi Lawless at my age, it was like a big deal. And, you know, I've been on a Fox broadcast with him, and I, you know, that's already surreal enough. But to have him record a song for me It's next level. It's next level crazy. I have a very cool job.
Yeah, that seemed like a long humble brag. I'm not gonna lie.
It is that, and I embrace it.
Well, it's deserved, man. Of course, you know Paul, national writer for MLSsoccer.com. Check all his work there. Follow him on Twitter, @PaulTenorio. Let's get right into it, Paul. We've been having this conversation with both you and Gamtam and Sam for a while now. May 1st is the deadline on this transfer window. I'm getting the feeling that nothing of any note is going to happen. Am I wrong?
Yeah, so I think the buzz has been mostly around the league that there aren't going to be any major moves. I do think, though, that in the last couple days, I've spoken to some people around the league, and there is a feel that there are some teams that are trying to sneak in some moves if they can internationally. Now, the challenges are there when you're looking at the European tables. You're asking clubs to release guys 2 and 3 weeks early before the end of their season. You know, if they're in a race for first place in the league, if they're in a race for a European competition, if they're in a race for promotion or relegation, it becomes much more difficult. But I do think that there are a couple teams out there who have some targets for the summer who are pushing in these negotiations to see, hey, is there any way we can get this player a little bit early before the end of your season so that we can get him for those extra few months? I'll be interested to see if any of those talks result in a move that we don't expect happening to come down on the last day or the day before the deadline.
We're here out in L.A., Paul. Andre Horta would be one of those names. It kind of feels like that's a no-go for LAFC. Are you heard anything on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a tough one, and it's kind of frustratingly a tough one, right? Because he's at a team right now that's not really playing for anything, and the reason they're not releasing him is he's playing so well. It's kind of funny, you know. I just left Atlanta United's facility, and I'm working on a story about Ezequiel Barco, and you know, we're talking about that transfer and the difficulty of getting it done, and they were really, really happy to see Barco doing so well in the Copa Sudamericana with Independiente because it only reinforced how good of a player they thought he was. But the better he did in that tournament, the more difficult it became to get that deal done, and that's kind of what's happening with Horta. He's been playing so well that it's making it harder for him to get released and get to L.A. ahead of the close of this primary window.
We've got some questions from fans for you, Paul, about some potential moves. And one of the names that has come up is Christian Ramirez. Is there anything you've heard about him? He hasn't gotten maybe as many starts as some people have liked. Some of fans, including Nathan and Trenton, have asked maybe a potential move for him to San Jose or to Liga MX.
I think if there would be any movement that happens with Christian Ramirez, it would be to Liga MX before it would be an intra-league trade for multiple reasons. The first being, I definitely think that the teams that make the most sense for Christian Ramirez are Western Conference teams. And for the most part, GMs don't like to trade players within their own conference if they can avoid it. But most importantly, it's all about return on investment. Where will you maximize the amount of money you get? I think a sale would make the most amount of sense for Christian Ramirez. However, this Minnesota team now has less depth than they had a week ago. Ethan Finley going out with the ACL makes this makes an already thin roster even more thin, and in an area where they felt very good, their attacking talent. Abu Dhanlady picked up another knock. He's never been able to stay healthy. I think it would be a big risk for them to sell Christian Ramirez unless they were able to go get a move done in the summer that added another attacking piece that maybe they could push Quintero up top or, you know, move Quintero to the wing and bring in a number 10. Maybe they would get some flexibility, but it would be, I think, very difficult for Manny Lagos and Adrian Heath to look at this roster right now and say, yeah, we can afford to move somebody versus bringing somebody in.
Paul, one of my favorite pieces on the site in the last 7 days, but maybe ever, was the trade column that Bobby Warshaw did. And Bobby did a great job, but I thought you did an even better job throwing some cold water or maybe encouraging him on some of those. You know, Christian Ramirez, Lee Wynn, those are just a few of the names being rolled around. Are there any names out there that you're hearing might be shoppable? I mean, I look at a Tommy McNamara who says, hey, I think I'm playing as well as I ever have, but he's not playing. Like, at what point do GMs sit back and say, I have an asset, I need to move it? At what point do players say, I got to move, I need to play?
Yeah, I mean, I think those conversations are happening constantly in the league. I always hesitate to say the names of guys who are being shopped around. I will, because so many different conversations occur, and then if the deals don't happen, there's a little bit of a fallout within the club when it's been reported. But I would say this. The names I'm hearing right now on the market are kind of back end of the roster guys, where there's a reason why these trades probably won't go down. They're not the bigger names. However, I have heard a couple different players within the league who have gone to management on teams and started to at least initiate a conversation of what is my future here. How far that goes before it's, hey, I need a trade, you know, that remains to be seen. It also, you know, I've got to get to a point where I can confirm it from multiple people before I report it. But I think that there are, you know, as of today, I've heard of at least three different Western Conference teams who are shopping players, and a couple Eastern Conference teams who are gauging interest on potential trades within the league. So there is some activity boiling up. I would expect that the more of the movement on interleague trades will happen in the summer versus in this window. I think it's a little soon for NYCFC to feel confident, for example, that their roster won't, you know, pick up an injury or two here where Tommy McNamara all of a sudden becomes a key piece. But when you get to mid-July, early August, and that secondary window is going to close, maybe it's worth going and getting that money while you can, and maximizing that money when a team is desperate.
All right, you're in Atlanta. We're out in L.A. We toured the training facility today. It's beautiful. I saw your photos. Of course, Atlanta's is beautiful. You're working on a Barco piece. Tell us about that.
Well, Barco, it's kind of funny, right? I mean, this is the biggest transfer in MLS history, and I feel like he's kind of flying under the radar for a couple reasons. The first is the transfer was so difficult to get done that it became Barco watch, and, you know, everyone just said it's definitely going to happen. Let's kind of move on, and everyone moved on. And so by the time it finally got done, that story had kind of played through its whole cycle, and he came in the middle of preseason, and everyone was kind of focused on their own teams and rosters, and the news cycle had moved on. Then the spotlight comes back to Barco for the opening game of the season, and what happens a day or two before? He does his quad, and he's out for 5 weeks. So he slides back into the lineup, into the starting lineup last week, and really kind of under the radar. He just was able to transition right back in. So I'm looking at the difficulty of the deal, how it went down, how actively Barco made the deal happen. And I think that's what really makes this story special, to have a player as big of a name as Ezequiel Barco, as important as he is in Argentina domestically, push to get this deal done to come to MLS. It says a lot about how far the league has come and a lot about the reputation of Atlanta United. I think that'll be the most interesting part of the piece. But I think I also kind of want to put the spotlight back on this kid and say, hey, here's a $15 million player who has been in with the senior national team of Argentina at the age of 18 and is starting to get his rhythm back in Atlanta. Let's cast our eyes over to him and see what he's capable of doing.
Yeah, I'm watching every move from him. And I wonder what you expect, but maybe what the folks within the club expect from him now, middle of the season, end of the season?
Super high expectations. And, you know, I think anyone that kind of knew the transfer was going down was watching him during the Copa Sudamericana. I was down in Argentina during the final just on vacation and saw the hype around him domestically within Argentina, saw the game, saw the nerve of this kid at 18 years old to step up and take a penalty at the Maracanã on that stage with that kind of pressure and deliver. Says a lot about who this kid is. And my expectation is for him to get to that level of play. And we've seen what one of the better domestic products or players in that domestic league can do in MLS. We've seen it with Miguel Almirón. Now, Barco's a few years younger, so he's not as developed in his career yet as Almirón was, but he was incredibly productive at the end of last season with Independiente. And the expectation is when he gets his rhythm, when he gets his form, when he gets comfortable with this team, that he is a game-changing player who, when teams sit back against Atlanta United, he's a guy capable of creating a goal on his own, a la Sebastian Giovinco. How does that change the way that teams will have to play Atlanta United, especially once we get close to the playoffs?
One of the other stories that's come out over the past few days, Sean Davis going to re-sign with New York Red Bulls, and then Daniel Royer announced has a contract extension today. You look at the Red Bulls, there was a little bit of angst at the end of CCL, feeling like that result and the way they went out was similar to in past years. What do you see when you look at the Red Bulls heading into this season, the next summer transfer window, about the way they're going about this team?
I think there has to be some questions asked about how can they adjust the way they play to kind of catch teams off guard here and there. We've seen that done to great effect by Toronto FC, right? I mean, switching from that 3-5-2 to the 4-4-2 diamond, for example, or even Columbus Crew, a team that loves to play out of the back, going to Atlanta United last year in the playoffs and pressing high. You have to be able to vary things up in order to win in this league. The coaching is getting to that point. And I think there is some concern when I talk to people around the league, some doubts about whether or not the Red Bulls are going to be able to maintain this high-pressing system over the course of 34 games into the playoffs, or will they start to break down? So I wonder whether those questions will start to be asked within the Red Bulls if we're already starting to see some signs of it. You know, against the Fire, they take Sean Davis out. They add some new faces in. Kaku comes into the lineup. They pressed a little bit less, and they got beat at home by the Fire. Now, those are some of the growing pains you have to go through when you start to work on different systems and different ideas tactically of how you want to break a team down. Are they willing to take some of those lumps in April, in May, in June, knowing that they're going to pay off in September, October? And are they going to look at the transfer window in the summer and say, hey, let's add one or two pieces that are a bit different in order to have some flexibility tactically, not just some depth with how we play going into the playoffs, and see if that helps us get these better results? Because they get to those stages right before the main event, and then they fall short. So they need to do something different to be able to get to that main event.
Dave Slow played you a little bit. I think you reported the Sean Davis news, did you not?
I did report the Sean Davis news.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a good move. I thought it was a really good move for them to lock up a homegrown who's done well. He's worked his way into a starting lineup, and you reward him for it.
Now, I don't want to make Paul flex on him.
I know. He already was humble bragging so much after that Alexis thing. You know, it is what it is. We'll pump you up when we can, Paul. But it's him. It's Pipa. There are contracts being signed right now, and I wonder why that is, why this is the timing. Is it perhaps because they had the opportunity to sign those deals 6 months ahead of the end of their contract? Why the timing on these?
Well, I think every negotiation is different. You know, this Sean Davis one is definitely, they felt like they had a deadline, right? I mean, you don't want to get to the point where somebody can sign a pre-contract. So you get that deal done ahead of the summer window, make sure that you lock up and keep away the competition. With players like Pipa, you need to show that confidence. And this is Greg Berhalter saying, you're our guy. You're going to be leading this team forward for the next year and a half. And I think those types of deals happening at this point in time for a veteran player, I think can push them to that next level. It means a lot to those players, and I think that's why the deal was done now.
All right, last one for you here, Paul. Enjoy Atlanta, Toronto FC. Came up a little bit short. PK's, MLS's run once again stymied by Liga MX and CONCACAF Champions League. What did you make of the final, the performance from Toronto, the end result, free space, of course, is disappointment, and the overall tournament for Major League Soccer?
I mean, I think you have to look at it and say it was progress more than anything else. You know, this is this is the best performance we've seen from a Major League Soccer team in this competition. And that should be the big takeaway. However, there is major disappointment here for the league as well. I mean, this Toronto team is as well put together as any other team. And here's the killer part. They had every opportunity to win this final. I thought they had a lot of good chances to put it away. Well, I don't want to say put it away, but to give themselves a big cushion at home. They weren't able to finish those chances. I think of the Marky Delgado goal that could have been in the final minute last night before penalties. So, yes, there's huge disappointment. I'll be most interested to see how this team responds now to a loss like that, because winning the Champions League was the big motivation for this Toronto team. And to fall just short and to be in last place right now in the league, emotionally, they need to be able to respond right away. And I think also we've seen Jovinko voice to Kurt Larson that he wants a new contract. I think we're going to get an update on that, you know, later on this week from Gam, Tam, and Sam. But, you know, how is this Toronto team going to move forward and keep this group together and keep this group focused to rebound? Because that'll be important for the growth of MLS, is to have Toronto staying right there in the mix.
How is Sam Stachel going to respond to the fact that we're now just calling him Gam, Tam, and Sam? This has become a movement. It's become a lifestyle, and Sam needs to lead it for us. Paul Tenorio, of course, your man here on Thursdays on Extra Time Radio. Big thanks to Alexi Lawless for bringing him in at Paul Tenorio on Twitter. Go follow him. Follow his work at MLSsoccer.com. Paul, thanks, man. Enjoy the Big A.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Enjoy L.A.
MLS Week 9, here we go. Starts on Friday, by the way. Vancouver, Real Salt Lake. You can watch it in Canada on TSN, national TV there. ESPN Plus, as we mentioned off the top, is your home for just about everything else. You've got Philly, D.C. on Saturday at 3:30. That's on Unimas, also streaming on Twitter. At MLS is your source for that one. And then, of course, it's Sunday. Colorado, Orlando gets the day started on ESPN at 4 p.m. Eastern. NYCFC, FC Dallas, ESPN Plus for that one. Then the game that we're going to be at that I can't wait for, 9 p.m., LAFC, Seattle on FS1. It's the opening, man. It's Bank of California Stadium. It's a first of so many firsts for LAFC, and that's one of the things that you really – feel come through when you talk to the folks at the club. And we were out at the training facility today, as we mentioned, but just kind of this ability to stack them on top of each other and have all these like incredible experiences jammed into this tight time frame. And I truly believe that this is going to be the most special for this club, because this is when they come home. This is when they get to experience and celebrate with their fans, not a rally, not a, you know, not all these things that they've done that are special, but playing in your stadium that's beautiful and brand new. And, I mean, we haven't got to go there yet. We'll go there on Friday, but it is spectacular. And just remember, Extra Time Live, you can experience it with us, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, facebook.com/Extra Time Live. Go like or follow our page. We're going to be hanging out. We've got interviews with Bob Bradley, facility tour you can check out with John Thorington. Let's see, stadium tour we've got for you, tailgating with the fans, a box full of T-shirts, jerseys, match balls. I think we're going to try to play some folks. Pick up soccer in the parking lot. I brought my ankle braces.
Yeah,
I may wear them underneath my jeans.
Smooth.
Like,
smooth.
Yeah, you know, just incognito-like, just so people don't know that they're getting 100% weeby.
Yeah.
And then we just run them.
God.
Or
you should wear one of those.
They're probably going to have to cart me off.
You're like one of those guys who wears the like lifting belt permanently under your shirt.
Right.
Just in case I got to lift something.
You know, in case you got to pop some deadlifts.
Yeah, exactly.
You never know.
Just
never
throw
know.
A couple in there. It's going to be fun. I'm very excited
What stands out to you when you know, look, we're sitting out here on this beautiful patio looking at palm trees, and I'm like, I can understand why Bob Bradley and, you know, Thorington's from here. He's a Manhattan Beach guy. We're like, yeah, I think L.A. is going to work for me. You guys
why
are building
Bob Bradley
this
wants to drive his electric car to LAFC training every day.
Uh-huh.
And then he gets to work out.
He's environmentally conscious.
Yeah, of course. He's conscious of everything.
We were doing this. We were doing the facility tour, by the way, and Bob Bradley is like busting out core workouts and like yoga.
That's
by
what he
himself
does.
In the gym.
He takes no breaks.
No.
That guy probably worked out before, too. Gets
yeah,
there, works
he did
out,
actually.
Training.
He did his bike routine.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. It's exciting. It's funny because they keep talking about our club ethos, which is by LA, in LA, and being from.
But they keep saying bespoke of LA, which is.
It's very.
I live in Brooklyn. We're staying in Silver Lake. I'm very familiar with bespoke.
So being from New York, where I have cliches about places that aren't New York.
Right.
It's funny how they fit into any of them by what they're trying to do, which is great for them, which is cool for them, because one of the big selling points, you know, for the Galaxy always has players want to come and live in L.A. and they want to experience this city. They love this city when they don't play in this city, and they want to come here and be a part of it. And so it's a cool way to sell it, and they are very dogmatic in what they're saying, and I think the players are really starting to connect with the city. And you talk about players that have never played a home game here. So they're already connecting with this city, and they've still got so much farther to go with the opportunities to play in that home environment, to play in that home stadium. So it's been pretty successful so far, obviously, on the field and I think off the field.
Yeah, they got that little taste at the Galaxy because they had that huge traveling contingent. But that's – look, the whole stadium's going to be black and gold. You're going to have some Seattle fans come down. I think that's another exciting part of this match is that Sounders fans travel en masse, especially on the West Coast. So to have the away atmosphere to go along with your first match is truly special. It'll be special for Tyler Miller, who we talked to today. And, you know, he said, look, I wasn't getting the opportunities with the Sounders. And for Bob and John to give me this faith that he's repaid, by the way, is super special. And the whole team is repaid by it, by the way. 4 wins in 6 games. We've said it over and over and over. Only 5 teams in the whole league had more than that away from home last year. You know, Bob said we weren't counting away games. We weren't counting down to this moment. Like, I believe him, but I don't believe him. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, come on, it's Bob. He's had a strategy for this little period of time, and they had the break and the training and the travel and everything else. Like, they planned for it, but they got through it with such flying colors that now I just feel like their season comes down to one thing, home form. Because everything on the road from here on out is a benefit. I think Toronto FC had 7 wins away from home last year. The most in the West was Vancouver with 6, I think. I'd have to go back and look at the standings, which I'm going to do right now because I have a computer directly in front of me. But if they win at home, they've got a chance to be at the top of the Western Conference. They've got a chance to get a bye. They've got a chance to have a home game in the playoffs, which ultimately is their goal, because look at what happened with Atlanta last year. It's not just about the home game. It's about having the series and about advancing.
And about making your name and being able to promote towards that and get your fans to come out for that. I agree with you. I also think there's an interesting element of the way you're allowed to play on the road and then the way teams are going to play you when they come to your house. Seattle's going to play them differently than they did when they came to Seattle. Because Seattle's going to sit back probably.
Seattle was in the middle of CCL at that point, too.
They had a million chances in that game. And I thought they were going to score for a while. Turns out they were going to wait 6 weeks to score a goal. I didn't know that. I didn't know that Seattle got that memo. I wasn't informed of that.
Guys, hold on. On the calendar, it says 6 weeks from now we get that goal.
Yeah, so season starts in
Tampa
April.
Tamp it down.
So it will be interesting to see how teams react now, right? Because it's an expansion team. They've conceded a bunch against, you know, the LA Galaxy. We got to go out and play them. And then you look at it and you say, well, if we're going to go there and we know that Bob Bradley has them well drilled the way they want to play, then let's change what we're going to do. Let's react to them before the game even starts. And every game they play, there's more tape on them. There's more of an idea of what they want to do, of how they want to play, of the tendencies of the individual players reacting to each other. And then you look at guys like Vela and Rossi, and they're new to the league. So everyone's still learning them. Everyone's still trying to figure out how they play. You're not going to stop either of those players.
Yeah.
Those are class players.
They want to get out in space, in transition, and they want to combine. It's a team that wants to break quickly, and, you know, watching them train today, there's a lot of, like, focus on verticality, getting the ball forward, getting it into wide spaces for those guys to attack defenders. And I think that's what teams are going to see when they come to Bank of California Stadium. They're going to say, why are we going to stretch the field for these guys? Why are we going to make it easy? Why are we going to make it easy for Carlos Vela, in fact? And I think he's a great test case to look at as the team's figuring out. And I think about the way Chivas has played through CONCACAF Champions League with a straight-up man-marking system. Do you do a little bit of that and say, look, you guys can have Ureña. You can have Diego Rossi, Latif Blessing, or whoever plays in that right wing. Look, we'll play him straight up. But Carlos Vela is not going to beat us. And what does Vela do? What does LAFC do to solve those problems? And, look, they gave up 3 goals to Montreal. Ignacio Piatti tore them open. They gave up 5 goals to Atlanta United.
Which, by the way, just talking about Piatti for a second, different type, not a forward, obviously, but plays it differently than Bruin. So I'm interested to see what happens on Sunday because, in my mind, Piatti's ability...
There's not a Piatti on the center.
No, but his ability to find space in between the two center backs, to be mobile enough to pick up the ball in different spaces rather than conventional forward areas, I thought was really dangerous against LAFC. I don't think Will Bruin gives you that challenge. And if you put Will Bruin physically up against the center backs for LAFC, I'll take the LAFC guys. I'll take Simon. I'll take Zimmerman. So,
and if Dempsey's not on the field, who's in that little hole
right, to
pull Simon forward? And that's maybe where Bruin can do his work. That's maybe where you can slip a ball through. I mean,
oh, by the way, Christian Roldan today in training made a dad joke.
Oh, yeah?
He said, it's their party and we're here to Bruin it.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Even, ugh.
Yeah. Thought you'd like that
one. That's awful. That's just terrible. That's the...
So one of the things we talked about with LAFC coming into the year is Bob Bradley's past success as an expansion team in MLS. How would it affect it? One of the things I heard, and I've talked to a couple coaches that have been around LAFC, especially in preseason, just observing them and whatnot, was that they kind of worked on a few things consistently. And so it was a lot of small-sided 4v4, 5v5 work. And I think Bob realized, I can drill in one or two things to perfect that we can rely on, and now you're talking about verticality and changing the game that I can then start to build out as the season goes along. But I think his idea was, I'm not going to try and build a full top-to-bottom system, club, team in 8 weeks.
Yeah, no, that's smart.
And it worked.
Block by block.
And we asked a million times, he won in this MLS, it's a new MLS, does it matter? He had a concept of what it takes to win for a brand new team. And now it's going to be exciting to watch him add to that and grow on that because he's a great soccer mind.
Yeah, look, I think what –
sorry,
what
football.
As yeah, football. And I wanted to ask him that today. Like, when did you make the switch? When did you decide that, like, for your purposes, this sport was no longer soccer? It was now football.
Yeah.
And he's dedicated to it. I'm curious to see just because of his kind of – I feel like his mind – and I don't know if it's like this universally, but for soccer, and that's what I say, it is a sponge, and it feels limitless. Like, when you talk to him, and he starts talking about concepts, he starts telling you about all these kind of, like, these modern teams that are doing different things. You know, Klopp's Liverpool does this, and I really like it. You know, this team does this, and we think we can pull a little bit of that in. And then he'll go back, you know, the AC Milan teams of the late 80s, early 90s. I just look at what he's done, and I think this is a guy that's not missing any tactical wrinkles, and he's certainly not missing any within Major League Soccer. So how does he respond to them? And we're going to see at home, first ever game, 9 p.m. Eastern, LAFC hosting the Seattle Sounders. FS1 is your spot for that one. It's going to be a great game. I'm so excited to see it. Of course, we will be out at Bank of California Stadium. Come hang out with us. Christmas Tree Lane is where we're going to start. We'll be there. I mean, we'll be there like mid-afternoon, chilling. T-shirts, jerseys. Match balls. We want to give those away to you. We're not taking them home. We shipped them out here. We're not shipping them back. Watch Extra Time Live at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it only on Facebook. I take that back. It's also on Twitter. Also on MLSsoccer.com. Also on YouTube. We're expanding the brand. That is going to be a lot of fun.
We'll also be at the Galaxy game on Saturday
night. Good call.
First, the New York Red Bulls, who we just talked about, Daniel Royer. So if you have any interesting.
We already have
that.
Some invitations to some tailgates,
which
we are clearly taking up.
To feast.
So if you're cooking and or drinking or being merry or playing some pickup soccer in the parking lot, Dave and I will stop by. Hit us up on Twitter. You know how to get at us. Look, should be a big weekend. On Monday, we'll break it all down with Matt Doyle back in New York. That's it for us. Let's go to the mailbag. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Serving USA. You'll catch them serving at the
inside, outside, USA.
Better a county line.
On Extra Time Radio, hanging out here in Southern California, Los Angeles. Extra Time Live going down on Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Watch it. Facebook Live, Extra Time Live is the page. Go follow us. Go like us. Also, YouTube, Twitter, and MLSsoccer.com. We're into the mailbag. You know how to get at us. I don't have to repeat that, but I just noticed over here on this deck to our right, because we're in Silver Lake. It's very hipster, a lot of decks. That is a purple cactus. No, that's a blue cactus. What am I talking about? Blue cactus. Do you see that?
Sort of, yeah. It looks like a plant.
I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know you could do that.
Well, I don't know you do it. I think it's natural. Oh, okay. That might not be
true. All right,
here
we go.
There's an orange tree over there.
Thomas DeLorenzo. Bradley missed the PK in 2016 Cup. Captain U.S. National Team that didn't qualify for the World Cup. Missed PK in CCL Final. I love the guy. But this is his legacy, choking in big moments. Brockhoff. Hey guys, not sure how I should feel after last night's game. How can I acknowledge what TFC accomplished without ignoring the obvious narrative that guys like Bradley and Altidore have failure? Follow them. Kevin Chan, dear MLS, please. Oh, no, wait. Yeah, we'll let you react to those two. What do you think about this? This is inevitably where people are going to go. Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore are polarizing, and they're polarizing for a reason. It's because they are in big moments. There are actually not that many players in U.S. soccer that are like, oh, you know what? When big moments come, I'm in those moments. And with big moments comes failure. And with failure comes a legacy that you have to live with as a player and as a person. But I don't look at these guys from CCL and say chokers.
No, they got a
World
team.
Cup, maybe we have a different conversation.
But they got a team to a place no team's ever been before.
Well, other teams have been there.
But they put them in a situation. Okay, the RSL one, fine. They put them in a situation. First of all,
Montreal tied in Azteca and then came back, scored the opening goal at home.
Yeah.
Then got blown off the face of the earth.
Which is something that didn't happen to TFC at any point. And, yeah, okay, maybe there was 5 minutes where it looked possible with, like, a C squad out there at the back line. But the positions they've put TFC in take away this whole narrative. First of all, Bradley played out of his mind last year in MLS Cup. Josie Altidore scored the game winner against Crew to get them into the Cup, and then scored the game winner in MLS Cup. How is that a guy who's choking in the big moment? How does that narrative
and
make
how many big goals did he score in this tournament?
He scored versus Spain in 2009 to beat the best team of all time in international competition, which is probably the greatest win in U.S. soccer history. Michael Bradley, part of the 2010 World Cup team, one of the most productive U.S. national teams of all time. Like you said, they're in big moments so they can fail there. That is because we choose to ignore when we do things well and when U.S. players do things well. Michael Bradley came to Toronto to create something. He has created the greatest team in MLS history. He's not just a piece of it. He's a major part of it. Him and Greg Vanney are a two-headed monster. He helps build that culture. He's helped bring Josie Altidore there. He's helped get guys comfortable. And he does whatever he has to do to help that team win. So if you walked away from this CCL tournament thinking that Bradley negatively affected his legacy, then I don't know what you're watching because I can't disagree with you more.
Some more on this. Joe, my wife thinks I'm crazy for not getting over this, but I have no sympathy for Bradley and Josie in the CCL final because of their leadership of the team that failed to qualify for the World Cup. I'm listening to the podcast, We Came to Win, and when I heard that the U.S. team that qualified for 90 were practicing at their own homes alone, kicking balls against walls to prepare, I got even more indignant that we did not qualify. Those guys did that. They put that effort in to help grow what we have now. And if you talk to those guys, they look around the league and they say, wow. They also say, what the hell happened? We should be at the World Cup. That's a huge step back and a massive failure. And it is. And those players will never get away from it. But look, I look at it the same way you do, and that legacies are not single speed. Everything that you do is accountable and goes into that. And I don't know how you can look at Michael Bradley's career and not say that he is a trailblazer, signing at the time he did to MLS, going to Heerenveen, scoring goals in the Eredivisie, going to Mönchengladbach, becoming a huge player for them, a huge club in Germany, in the Bundesliga, going to Chievo Verona, and becoming, you know, the general down there as well, going to Roma. I mean, everything, and learning all these languages along the way, by the way, doing it the right way as an American export, and then coming back to MLS and doing this, like doing what he did with the national team. I don't know how you look at his career and say, this guy is a choker, or this guy doesn't deserve my respect. Or just it blows my mind that you can look at the sum of those parts and compare them to everybody else who's done this in U.S. soccer and have that opinion. Same thing with Josie Altidore, by the way. And has it always been pretty? No. He had bad stints at Sunderland. He has had injuries that have derailed the national team and his club career. But what he's done as a striker is basically unprecedented. And I mean, I think a lot of this comes from pain, and a lot of this comes from expectation, and I get that. And everybody can have their opinion, and that's the beauty of all this.
He's 28 years old, and he's playing at the highest level he's ever played. He's peaking in his prime, and he's become in the conversation of the greatest U.S. national team forwards of all time, and he still has a number of years to go. Yes, U.S. World Cup qualifying was less than ideal. It was a huge, huge mistake. We also have talked to a lot of people in U.S. soccer who have said, you know, we've got all these improvements, but it's gone backwards in my day. 1990, Mexico was suspended, couldn't qualify. U.S. finally qualified. 94, you didn't have to qualify. Yes, they got out of the group stage. But, like, let's have some perspective, because everyone loves to say, in my day, things were tougher. In my day, players were better. In my day, we worked harder. Maybe. But, like, you can't compare apples to oranges. And everyone always now wants to stand up on a high horse. Did you guys have a coach that got fired in the middle of a cycle? I mean, how many coaches have gotten fired in the middle of a cycle? Like Jurgen Klinsmann did.
And also, did you have a coach that was a disruptor like Jurgen Klinsmann?
Whatever, yeah. That's a whole nother conversation.
Here's another one that I imagine we'll have some opinions on. I don't know who this one's from. Might be from Kevin Chan. I can't tell. So if Chivas was, quote, the worst Mexican team in the CCL tournament, end quote, that was Doyle, and they beat the, quote, best MLS team of all time, that's me, I fail to see any disappointing free space. All I see is the reality that Liga MX is better than MLS, or perhaps Chivas is long overdue for some ETR respect.
No. If you're coming here for me to give Chivas some respect after what I've seen over these two legs, you are coming to the wrong store for that item. This is a Chivas team, as I said after the first leg, and I will continue on here, in moments when they had simple opportunities, they weren't able to even be dangerous. I mean, outside of the shot that Bono let in, shot cross, did Pulido do anything? Well, you didn't watch the second leg, so you have no idea.
Yeah,
no.
You're looking at me, you're
the
at
answer
me,
of that, the answer to that is no. This was a Chivas team that came out with, I don't know, seven defenders here in leg two against a TFC team playing B and C options at some positions, USL players off the bench, inexperienced players off the bench, and they still went down and won. Chivas
in the biggest game Chivas has played in in a game Chivas had to have to save their hides, to save their season.
45 minutes in the second leg. You're at home with 45, 50,000 fans screaming for you. Jay Chapman and Jordan Hamilton come off the bench on the other side, and you still couldn't create dangerous chances. At no point did Chivas look dangerous. At no point did Chivas impress me. And if you're a Chivas fan, congratulations. Enjoy the trophy. But don't try and have a conversation now, which is we were underestimated. You grind it out. And that's tournament soccer. It's one of the things that drives me nuts about tournaments is I don't think the most worthy team always wins, but I love them because they're dramatic.
That's why KU only has one national championship.
We
got
there.
Cross that one on ETR, bingo, straight off. I'm going to let you choose where we go next. I think we got to have some CCL detox.
Oh, we're not going to keep going CCL.
No.
Because I was going to say, here's one that I want to ask you. It doesn't matter if you watch it or not. Is there anything about PKs? Like, is them losing in PKs showing that they're not as good as we thought? Should they be better at PKs? Does it matter to you?
No. I'm with you in the sense that PKs are it's a crapshoot. And to me, PKs almost are – it's almost based on the feeling. Like – you're waiting for that domino to fall, and if it falls your way and the other team, you know, puts it a little close to the goalkeeper, or your goalkeeper pulls one out, or they hit the post, it's a momentum thing. And once you lose that momentum, it's impossible to get it back unless you make a game-changing, difference-making play. As a goalkeeper, certainly. As a player, or the other team makes a mistake. Chivas didn't make a mistake. And if you want to sit back and say, well, Chivas is better technically because they were better in penalties, like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, standing there and kicking a ball from X yards. Like, okay, that's one aspect of being technically good, and they did a better job there, and they handled that pressure better. But I don't look at PKs and say – and take some big picture, like, takeaway. It just – it's too isolated.
Okay, so we've got a couple emails. One of them here says, you guys are firing on all cylinders. It's good stuff out there. That's what the fans want. Clearly, we are in form, surprisingly early on. Here are my thoughts off the bounce. Firstly, I agree KC need that right forward to help them get to MLS Cup this year and the next couple years. They are really entertaining to watch. So I have a number 9 to throw out there. J. Rodriguez of West Brom. It looks like that could be a potential player that they might be able to get in that situation. What do you guys think?
I am a doubter that Sporting Kansas City will spend in maybe that manner.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I see that question. Like, what
I think that it will take. I think that it will take too much, and I think there'll be too much competition for that signature. Personally,
do you think that
for them? And at 28, I don't know that. Like, I know that he's in his prime, but he just
caught off
a bad year. Yeah. He is always hurt. To me, that doesn't seem like a Peter Vermees move.
Do you think they go inside the league? I think someone in Portland might be available because they've got two forwards.
I'm not sure. I know that
we love Armenteros.
Yeah, but we don't really know much. We haven't seen it from him in this league.
Is Maxi Arruti available if Coleman is the starter? Is Christian Ramirez, like we said, available? And we talked to Paul, and he said maybe not a guy that goes in league. Is a guy like Pino or someone that can you get them off Orlando?
I think they go outside of the league. I really think they go outside of the league because I think that they're going to go try to fill a DP slot with that. Or
the Paul Pierce move, like the old man move and the Wando move. Give him a chance to start 17 games
for them. If you can't get your targets in the summer, and, you know, the thing is I just don't think Wando will leave San Jose. I don't think Wando's out there saying, you know what, I'm ready to leave.
Yeah. And then we move on. And Derek Christian wants to know that Chris Mueller went to Wisconsin. That is all. I think Doyle asked that question. Doyle sarcastically asked that question.
Yeah, because
on the last one.
But
I want to give Derek Christian his moment. And then David Dimmitt,
what up, David?
Made us our songs, and he sent in his address so that we could send him
some
shirts.
That's a good
reminder.
If I've promised you a shirt, I've been It's one of many things that I've let slip in fatherhood.
No, that is a lie.
Let me blame this
since
on fatherhood.
We have been giving things away, you just casually will be like, you get this. And then, like, it doesn't really register anywhere except for a quarter second in your mind and
correct.
Then.
Correct. So send the email, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. Hey, Cam is an innocent baby boy that can bear the weight of this blame. No, I'm just
kidding. Mainly on his chubby head.
Email, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. Put in your subject line, Weeby, you promised me a T-shirt. Give me a size. Give me an address. Remind me when I promised it and why.
He also asked for an extra T-shirt or a signed photo of me for his girlfriend. That would make her super happy. I got a lot of fans right now. I did the wedding thing. The brand is strong.
You know what? Your brand is flying in the non-traditional ETR way. To the significant others, to the people that don't. They're like, I don't know, you know, but we just love Dave.
I'm the guy.
You're the everyman.
I'm the, what's it called? The gateway to ETR.
You're the gateway
If you don't like.
Your ETR's gateway
If you don't like ETR, you get a little sprinkle of me, and then you're like, that guy is good.
I think this is probably the right time to end this show. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Paul Tenorio for jumping on. Any thoughts, you know how to get at us. That's it from us. Watch Extra Time Live Sunday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, MLSsoccer.com. Come hang out with us. And if you're in L.A., literally, come hang out with us. With that, we'll see you next week, everybody.